Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is our series on learning disabilities, the hidden disability. So we are working together, and I am working with Linda Price, Dr. Linda Price from Temple University. Linda and I have worked on numerous projects. Linda is an author and is just an all-around good person, and we enjoy working together. So let's talk a little bit more about some of these different areas. I want to go into talk about dysgraphia. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and it's not dysgraphia.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay. And then, you know, maybe talk about some of the associated deficits and disorders that also kind of rear their ugly head with a learning disability. So tell us about dysgraphia. How would you describe that?
Okay. And by the way, before I get into that, I also want to put a disclaimer in real quick. When we talk about learning disabilities, we are not talking about somebody with a visual problem, a hearing problem, a motor problem, or a behavioral problem. For example, somebody that has a visual discrimination problem, the eye itself and the optic nerve will still be intact, and they will be able to see just fine. Steve, it's just that the way the brain processes the information, it scrambles it. Okay, it's kind of like when you're trying to turn on your cable TV and you get like weird stuff on your screen. That's what can happen within the brain when we're talking about these various subtypes of learning disability. So in terms of dysgraphia, dysgraphia deals primarily with what we call written language. This is like when you're trying to put your thoughts down on paper, when you're trying to write a paragraph on your iPad. It's literally trying to put your thoughts into written symbols. Now, in the old days, we used to say, remember, Steve, when we all had handwriting class?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, and remember that all the little kids would have, like, the piece of paper with the big bold letters or the big bold lines, and then you'd have to learn how to draw your letters, and you'd learn how to do cursive. We don't do that much anymore, but that's kind of a piece of dysgraphia. Is there's a motor component attached where folks with dysgraphia have trouble actually forming the letters. They have trouble writing them down and putting them in sequence. So I think I told you before about my biker client that was wanted me to do the marriage counseling. And when he would write something for me, he would make the most god-awful sounds you've ever heard in your life. Because when I would give him a piece of paper and a pen to write something down, he would write and he would scratch out, and he would write and he would scratch out. And literally, you'll see, this is extreme, but you'll see folks with dysgraphia that will literally erase a hole in the paper.
Wow.
And it's because, they are trying so hard to force their brain to process that written word, and they can't.
You know, yeah,
other examples.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I always tried so hard to try and get the best writing in class. And the teacher would always put the best writing on the board. And Link Scott and Karen Rahm always got their, I probably still hold a grudge against them from fourth grade because they always got their papers on the wall, And I never did. But, when you think about it, too, I also remember doing that, when you would write in cursive, that's an ancient form of communication, when you would write in cursive, you would write S's, and you had the paper that had the, because your small letters were supposed to go up just halfway, whereas the capitals went up the whole way. And also then they had little dots, kind of you kind of followed the little dots to make the letter, I remember. And I even had a hard time following the dots on there. So I think that that's, one of those issues. Go ahead.
And it's important to remember with dysgraphia that, you know, nowadays people don't write that much anymore. The old red flag for dysgraphia used to be people that mix cursive and written language.
Oh, really?
You know, written symbols. Yeah, that was kind of one of the first things you noticed in a screening, is if you asked them to write a sentence and they'd have some cursive writing and some, you know, some printing. Now we don't do that much anymore because obviously everybody types and you have the computer. So what we look at more with dysgraphia now is we look at people that are able to write a complete sentence, or people that are able to put paragraphs together, or people that are able to put coherent thoughts down on paper. So it's gone from like the actual fine motor stuff to looking more at the big picture. How do they actually manipulate written language?
Yes, yes. And, you know, that's interesting, mixing cursive or even, I've even seen people that will mix cursive and printing, you know, all mm-hmm. those things kind of fall into place there. And you can also see how these would apply in a job situation, mm-hmm. you know, or filling out certain kinds of forms, you know, even I always find out that when I fill out forms, if I have to write it and not do it with a computer now, it's really difficult to get it between the lines. And there are all kinds of forms. And think about this, Linda, and see if this makes sense to you, too. A lot of times the question that they ask on, let's say, an employment form, they're really difficult to answer. I mean, you could answer them with a yes or no, or you could write a, you know, Gone with the Wind type of novel. Have you ever been arrested? You know, what does that, I kind of know what that means, but have you ever committed these kinds of crimes? I mean, I think that those are really general, kind of nebulous questions that a person with a learning disability would have a hard time answering. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think it is, but you know, you and I are going to do a broadcast down the road about the interview process and doing a resume in the 21st century.
Right.
And one of the things
we call that preview of coming attractions. That's preview of coming attractions. Yes.
And they're going to be cool. Okay.
Yes.
They're going to be interesting, because as I've been kind of trying to do my homework on those to share with you. We're talking about a whole new universe here, how people are hired and how they are promoted. And part of it, Steve, is that because now, like when you do a resume for Indeed or you do a resume for one of these online sites, there's an algorithm that decides within, I think it's like 5 to 10 seconds, whether you go to the next pile to be hired. So what that means is if you're a person with learning disabilities and dysgraphia and you have problems putting your thoughts down on paper, you could be rejected for an incredible job that you are overqualified for or qualified for because you didn't put the right sequence of words or say it in the right way. And that to me is really kind of a frightening thing because it automatically knocks you out of a lot of jobs that you could be qualified for.
Yeah. And how many, I was in, I think my resume at one time was in LinkedIn or whatever is the website for jobs. And I used to get anytime I put down that I was a teacher or an instructor, my God, you couldn't believe the number of jobs that I got. But you also have to, in those types of things, use in if I was a person with a learning disability and I was filling out that kind of form, I think I would really go get some additional help from someone who was really familiar with those types of forms, because a lot of times it's just keywords. You mentioned the algorithm. You know, and how you write a resume and how brief you are. And even this may be a little bit off, but when you and I used to read grants and we would look at grants, and school districts and colleges would turn in grants that had, that were 400 pages long and had every attachment to them. You know, I went through those grants and I looked for key words and I looked for key questions that they answered. And if, you know, maybe I did it incorrectly, but I don't think I ever read all, you know, when I had 10 grants to read in a weekend and each one was 400 pages long, I don't think I read all 400 pages. And so what I'm saying is even in that type of a situation, you need to be precise. You need to know what words are the buzzwords that you put in there. And that's where I think that you would really want to ask for some, either take a class in it or some professional assistance, you know, to look for that type of support. What are some, go ahead.
One other area that I think could be real hard for people with dysgraphia is when they go to a job interview. And, you know, a lot of times, if you're lucky enough to get to the interview stage and they're even vaguely interested in you, they may give you forms to fill out, or they may ask you, they may give you like a hypothetical situation and ask you to solve it or to write something down. And folks with dysgraphia can have real problems with that because they can't do it quickly. I mean, if your brain is not processing written language and somebody gives you one of those little teeny tiny, you know, the forms with the little teeny tiny writing and say, would you fill this out for me and give it to my secretary? They're not going to be able to do that. And I talked with a couple of adults with LD that told me that they would lose jobs at the interview stage because they would have to say, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to take this written information home to my wife or to my girlfriend or to my roommate, and they're going to help me fill it out.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is. And again, I think we're just getting back to the basics here, that it is how you process something. Because I can, if we think, you know, of different jobs that I've applied for, or special education jobs, they will always say something like, you have a parent who has a child with, you know, such and such a disability, and they disagree with how this student's IEP is going. How would you address that, or how would you work with that parent? Now, that's a lot of different aspects to put together in a short period of time. One of the things that I was always told to do was to, you know, put the brain in gear before you put the mouth in gear. I think that, that's true, but you really need to think about it. And if someone has a learning disability and you say, can you answer this question? And they say no. And they, you say, okay, I'm going to give you $1,000 if you can answer this question. It doesn't make any difference. You know, if you can't do it, you can't do it. It's just like you can't make your, you know, if you can lower your temperature by 3 degrees so you don't have a fever, I'm going to give you $10. And it just, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Let's talk a little bit about what are some of the accommodations. Let's say you have a person with a learning disability who you've just hired as a receptionist or a secretary. How do you, as an employer, how would you go about and ask that person what they needed without getting into too much of the privacy concerns that we have to do, the medical privacy concerns when we interview someone?
Well, and this is something I think we'll probably talk more in depth when we get into Sure. the accommodation section. But what's really tricky about all this, Steve, is that under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the employer cannot ask the person if they have a learning disability or not. The person with LD has to self-disclose first.
Right.
So if that person has already self-disclosed to you, and we can talk about kind of ways that you can do that, if they've already said, you know what, I'm got a lot of experience in this area, I'm really good as a receptionist, but I have dysgraphia, what I need to use is I need to use my iPad or I need to use my computer, because I will not be giving you anything in handwriting. I will be giving you something that will be online. So like, for example, how many of us, you know, you've got a secretary and you walk in the door and they give you the stack of those pink slips. And those are all the telephone messages of all
right.
the people that have called you. Okay, so instead of having the person literally fill in a form or write that by hand, they could have like a little, basically like a set of boxes that are checked. Or they could do that all online. They could basically type it in and then send it to you by email, or they could send it to you online. So what you're doing is you're compensating for the fact that the motor skills and the brain are not processing simultaneously.
Right. And I had a secretary that I worked with when I was with the Office for Civil Rights. And we use different symbols on different papers to indicate how important that they were. And we did the same mm-hmm. thing. You know, you listed that, you talked about the pink slips. Again, there's a processing issue there, because let's say you've got 20 pink slips of people to call back, you know, you're probably going to mm-hmm. need to call your boss back or a client that's complaining about something and prioritize those, rather than you call back the guy that wants to sell you siding on your house. So what we did was we worked with this person and put little symbols if they were high priority. We just used different color little stickums, you know, on mm-hmm. there, almost like a little post-it as to what priority. Mm-hmm. And after a while, we then worked with her to get her to go through the pile and to sort those things. And she became essentially independent on that by being able to do that. So that's and we also used the same thing for a filing system for a while. You know, in just about any business, you use tons and tons of acronyms. And by being a little mm-hmm. more specific with the file, and, you know, we use the embossed plastic things on different file systems. But that also, you know, really, really seemed to help. I think that also let's talk about, you know, when you mentioned about the Americans with Disabilities Act, you're absolutely right. When you interview a person, you cannot ask about the nature or the severity of a disability. You have to ask, can you do specific tasks or specific mm-hmm. duties? And that really came from some of the legislation that came out, some of the, you know, the sex discrimination kinds of questions you could ask in an interview. You know, you can't ask if you're married. You can't ask if you have kids. Do you have to take the kids to school? I mean, all those kinds of things are, that is your responsibility, yes, but it's not a, it's not job related. And so I think first, and not every person, just as we've said before, not every person with a learning disability has the same issues. So if I ask you this, Linda, what do you think, this is a true statement? The first thing you need, if a person says they have a disability and or learning disability, you would want them to tell you what tasks you can perform, or they may, then they would tell you what limitations that they have or that they're experiencing in doing a task. Is that, does that make sense to you?
Kind of, but unfortunately I think it's more complicated than that, at least in my experience.
Okay.
This is what we call self-disclosure. And I'm going to put this statement out front for your listeners, because I think this is absolutely shocking. In terms of learning disabilities, there is no, and I want to emphasize, zero, no, nothing that is stated consistently that that gives people guidance how to talk about their learning disability. It does not exist. There are a couple little articles, there are a couple little things that you know, people have written down. But for example, if someone has Down syndrome and they go in, the person that looks at them is going to go, oh, okay, well, this person has a disability because of maybe physical features or whatever. When someone has a learning disability, there are very little clues. There are no clues. And so it's all got to come from the person that has DLD. The problem is, Steve, is that because nobody knows anything about LD, and because people with learning disabilities don't know about their own learning disability, they tend to get into these really awkward situations. So if someone, let's say I'm applying, you're the employer and I'm applying for a job, and you say, okay, Linda, tell me about yourself. And I said, oh, guess what? My name is Linda Price and I have a learning disability, and I'm really, really good with, you know, with language and verbal skills, but I really have problems with numbers. I have dyscalculia. I would bet you that 99% of those employers are going to go, okay, we're done. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And
that immediately, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that too, what I see is somebody comes, you know, a person looks like they're totally normal physically, and they say, yes, but I'm going to need this accommodation on the job. I think employers look at that person as being trying to get away from something here, or you're lazy, or they have a stereotypical response to, you know, that, because you can't see that disability. I think it's, you know, the other, you know, you mentioned about a, and I think this plays into this too, because you mentioned about a person who may have Down syndrome, and they may look different physically, but also persons with Down syndrome have a wide range of skills and abilities, from some that can live totally independently with maybe just a little support system, go to a job, get on a bus, go home, cook dinner, all those things. And yet you have other kids with Down syndrome, or other persons with Down syndrome, that, you know, may not have those cognitive abilities to do that. You know, really, that's true of every disability.
Right.
People see someone else in a wheelchair, and they see somebody maybe like with multiple sclerosis, who can has mm-hmm. the ability to stand up and, you know, transfer to another chair. And so they make that assumption. In my case, you know, I can't do that. I always like it at the airport where the guy said, well, can't you just walk like two steps? No, I can't. I can't walk two steps, you know. Can't you just do one? You know, or you, I got to the point where you went to a hotel and you said, is the room accessible? Yes, it is. It only has one stair into it. And, you know, so I think we... we're getting into an area where with learning disabilities, I think we make a lot of assumptions what people cannot. I mean, I kind of with the theme of our show, we make a lot of assumptions on a person's appearance or what they say about what they can't do, you know, rather than what they can do. And especially with learning disabilities, it's so, since you don't have that visual cue, it's that much tougher. We may notice that a person has a disability because, or may think it because maybe they act different or they seem to have an aura where they're, you know, like on Seinfeld where you have a close talker, you know, or a low talker. you know, or a loud talker. But, you know, I think some of those, and we'll get into that when we start talking about the soft skills and everything, but as to those things. So let's, we're getting ready to run out of time on our second show, or not our second show today, but anyhow, I think we've... got at least a good start on what these things are, what the learning disability is, and now we can go on to talk more about accommodations and how they specifically impact adolescents who are going through relationship building. I mean, that's so key in how you do these things. And on the job, how relationship building and those soft skills that a person with a disability learning disability may not have. So let's close her up for this session and we'll just hang in there and we will talk to you soon. And the website again is, it is
littleoldlady.com.
Yes.
Littleoldlady.com. Oh, little old lady professor.
All right. littleoldladyprofessor.com. You're not the little old lady from Pasadena, right? that was really bad. No. I'm sorry. Okay, goodbye, folks, and have a wonderful day.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.